Hey everyone, as you know, I'm fascinated by all things science, including neuroscience. Brains are neat. Many of you also know that I have kids. I'm a daddy. As it turns out, neuroscience and fatherhood intersect in some pretty interesting ways, so let's talk about it. Those of you who also have children would undoubtedly agree that it's about as transformative an experience as is physically possible. Having kids is simultaneously the most frustratingly difficult and intensely joyful thing in my life. Societally, we talk a lot about mothers, the experience of childbirth, and the incredible psychological changes that occur through pregnancy, delivery, and infancy. I've watched that shit twice up close with my own eyes, and it's bananas. Women go through a lot to bring new humans into the world. Of course, people can and should talk about mothers and motherhood all the time. But fatherhood is sometimes overlooked and misunderstood, given that there are biological and psychological changes that occur with us dads too. Darby Saxby is a PhD psychologist at USC who has been researching precisely this topic, which is the subject of her new book, Dad Brain, The New Science of Fatherhood and How It Shapes Men's Lives. It's all about the neuroscience of becoming a papa and the resulting physical ramifications. So we're talking about hormones, behavior, dad bod, and more. The implications of this research span neuroscience, endocrinology, psychology, and cultural anthropology, so there's a lot to discuss. And who better to discuss this research with than Darby herself? So let's have a chat with her now. Darby, thanks so much for joining us. Why don't you introduce yourself real quick? Tell us about who you are, what you do.
Sure. Very happy to be here. I'm a professor of psychology at the University of Southern California. I run a lab called the Neuroendocrinology of Social Ties. I study fathers' brains and bodies. And I wrote this book, Dad Brain, which is about the science of fatherhood and how it changes men's lives.
Very nice. Very sharp. Sharp looking cover.
Thank you. I'm a fan. You notice I'm wearing the bicycle dress because it's a bicycle cover.
That's there you like, go. Right. Integrate all the branding. That's a good way to do it.
I hear that's what you're supposed to do. Yeah.
Yeah. Very smart. So what's the deal? I mean, like mothers carry the child, they birth the child, they nurse the child, or mothers are where it's at. So why are we studying dads? Why is this important? What brought you to this field of study? Tell us about it.
Yeah, so I talk about this a little bit in the book, but I was actually raised by a half-time single dad. So after my parents got divorced, my dad got custody of us initially. And so my brothers and my sister and I spent a week with our dad as the primary solo caregiver and a week with my mom and our new stepdad. And so I saw my dad go from very checked out, not super hands-on parent to like the guy that was in charge of everything, helped us with our homework, drove us to school, taught me how to drive, and he became this amazing dad. And so watching him go through that transformation made me really think about why is it that some human men kind of turn on the ability to parent and prioritize parenting, and others might be absentee. And we have this huge variability in fathering behavior. And I think, you know, in science, when there's variability, there's interest, right? We wanna study phenomena that vary. So like you said, like the field has focused on mothers, and mothers are obviously incredibly important for the survival of our species. But we humans have adapted to be cooperative breeders. So we're alloparents. What that means is that we parent in community. And that makes us actually quite unique. So most mammals, mom is really the only caregiver who matters, right? Like mom is out of the picture, that newborn is not gonna survive. But we humans, we have allomaternal nursing, we have community caregiving, we have grandparent care. And a lot of the time we also have father care. So trying to figure out what the sources of variability are in fathering behavior is really interesting to me, and how that intersects with our brain and our biology, right? Like as fathers become more involved in care, their brain and their hormones start to adapt to that caregiving role.
Right. So it's very interesting because, I mean, there are obviously the tropes of the absentee father. And then just statistically, you know, women are almost always highly, highly involved with their children, although obviously there are counterexamples. But yeah, it makes you wonder, are we talking about biological factors? Are there anthropological, right, sociological factors? Where do those all intersect? But yeah, I mean, I guess insofar as we're discussing the neuroscience of it, what can we say about the actual paternal brain and the transition. Like, let's get into the nitty gritty of the neuroscience. Mothers, we know what's going on there to create the pair bonding. Fathers, where what's happening in the dad brain there?
Yes, I will tell you all about it, but we should circle back to the anthropology because that's pretty interesting too.
Yeah.
But in terms of the paternal brain, so I'll actually start with what we know about what's changing in mom's brains, which was a lot of what we know comes from a 2016 Nature Neuroscience paper that looked at a sample of women recruited from a fertility clinic, some of whom went on to become mothers during the study period, some of whom remained non-mothers. And the changes to the women's brains were so profound that a machine learning algorithm could actually figure out who had become a mother and who had not become a mother just by looking at what was different in the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And what was happening in women's brains was actually, and this sounds like bad news, we actually think it's good and adaptive. The brain is losing gray matter volume. So we are shrinking, our brains are shrinking. And that's probably a process of remodeling, pruning to make the brain work more efficiently,
mm-hmm.
and helping us connect more between specific pathways that we're using a lot. So the parts of the brain that lose gray matter volume in moms are those that are implicated in what we call the mentalizing network, which is a couple of different structures that work together when we're thinking about other people's minds. And when we're engaged in social cognition. So when you are a new parent, you're using your mentalizing network a lot because you have to cultivate empathy for this helpless infant, right? Moms are also showing changes to the reward network and parts of what we consider like the midbrain mammalian caregiving network.
Mm-hmm.
In dads, so, okay, I read this study. I thought it was so cool. I hopped on a plane. I did a Fulbright to Spain to work with the investigators who had published this work. They had a sample of fathers who were the partners of the women from the fertility clinic. And we combined that data with data that I had collected in my lab at USC. So I had scanned soon-to-be fathers when their partners were pregnant, and then mm-hmm. again about 6 months after birth. We combined those samples. We found that men were showing changes in the same parts of the brain as the mothers, but the changes were more nuanced, more variable, and more linked to paternal experience. You know, so we know, like you said, that moms are all quite involved in taking care of offspring, and pregnancy brings all of these hormones
right.
that are acting on the brain. Men show hormonal changes too around the transition to parenthood, but they're not as profound. And so what we think is happening, dads, is much more like a story of experience-dependent plasticity. The more dads mm-hmm. are engaging with babies and the more experience they're getting, the more we see this parental brain remodeling. So I always say, like, great fathers are made, not born.
Mm-hmm.
I think we often think about, and you hear this a lot in narratives around moms, like moms are, you know, innately wired to take care of children. And it's, I mean, I find that quite gender essentialist and not quite accurate, but it's less about being innately wired for something to automatically happen. It's more about how does the brain change as we learn and develop experience? And that certainly seems to be what's pointing to some of the variability in dads.
Yeah, because I mean, a woman doesn't have a choice in the matter, right? There's you know, there's a fetus growing, and there's going to be a physiological response. Whereas I think for us, so I mean, in terms of experience, like, does it really start the moment you see the child, or does it take time of interacting with the infant, or what about that first moment? Is there a lot we can say about that?
Yeah, it's interesting. I have a chapter in the book about birth, dad's experience of birth. And mm-hmm. For a lot of men, I think they would pinpoint that seeing their baby when their baby is first born is this really meaningful, transformative moment. But it varies, right? Like, I think for a lot of men, it's just about those like many, many, many little interactions that you have as you're getting to know a baby or a child.
Right.
And it can maybe take years for dads to feel like they've fully develop that bond. So, I mean, moms kind of have a head start, right? Because during pregnancy, you're already feeling the fetus.
Yep.
You're already aware that there's this creature growing inside of
right.
you. And dads sort of have to play catch up. And a lot of men really struggle in the first year or two after parenthood because there's just less for them to do, especially if mom is breastfeeding.
Yeah.
Their role is, they feel a little more like an appendage.
Yeah.
But,
I'm the
you know,
assistant, you know?
yeah, exactly. Like,
Yeah.
I'm the helper. I'm not the star of the show.
Right.
And that can be hard for a lot of new dads. I interviewed a lot of dads for the book, and you know, some of them said, like, my relationship with my kids really kickstarted after they could play sports, after I could teach them things. So I think every dad finds his own way into parenthood, but it doesn't always look exactly like mom's story.
Yeah. No, of course. And I resonate with that. I mean, it's like, you know, I watched two people come out of my wife, and it's the most intense experiences of my life. It's completely surreal, totally bizarre. And you do, I mean, you have that moment. You're like, this is the birth moment. This is a new baby. This is my baby. And that's very powerful. But I will admit it there. It's that process of bonding where you interact with the child. And now, you know, my kids are 6 and 3, and it's just completely different. We can talk to each other. We can do, you know, like, it's just, it's much more rich. You know, I obviously women go through so much, and nursing and like that initial phase is so incredibly bonding. And so we don't have that. We have this other experience about it. What do you find with childbirth? Like, do you think, like, in terms of men witnessing the childbirth, are there pros and cons to that? Or, I mean, most men, I think, at this phase, do watch. It's not like the 1950s where they're pacing with a cigarette in the hospital lobby, and then they come. What's your take on that?
Yeah, it's interesting. So I don't know if you saw this controversy, but Scott Galloway on his podcast recently said, "I don't think men should even be in the delivery room because it's just disgusting." And of course, there was a lot of pushback on that. But, you know, what's interesting is birth is very social, right? So throughout human history, one of the things that's unique about humans is we actually require assistance to deliver an infant.
Yeah.
You know, and that's partially because when we evolved to walk upright, we had to kind of make that trade-off between like our pelvis width and, you know, the size of a baby's head.
Head size, yeah.
Exactly. Like the obstetrical dilemma.
Yeah.
It's called the obstetrical dilemma.
Mm-hmm.
But birth has almost always been a female-only affair.
Sure.
So historically, women would be assisted by their sisters, their mothers, a midwife. And it was only when birth moved into hospitals, which was really like in the 19th century, it became medicalized. And all of a sudden you had like the male doctor presiding over birth.
Mm-hmm.
And women at that time were given super heavy anesthesia. It was called twilight sleep, which basically knocked you out, made you unconscious. And women couldn't even remember their own birth experiences. So it was actually like in the 40s and 50s that some moms actually started asking to have their partners present at birth, because they wanted to reduce the anesthesia and they wanted to be conscious of the birth. And you've probably heard of the Bradley method. Bradley was a pediatrician who actually advocated for husbands to attend childbirth. So there's been this huge sea change, but it really wasn't even until the 70s or 80s that dads started to be welcome at birth. And in some cultures, in some countries, like in Japan, it's actually not completely typical for men to be at childbirth. So it's been this very recent adaptation, like in our human history, yet we think of it as like, it's almost weird if men aren't at their baby's birth.
At least in America, I don't know. I feel like, we would probably shame one another. Like, what are you doing? You're not there, you know?
Yeah,
I don't feel like I was terribly necessary in any regard other than a support. I'm just holding your hand and like, you can do it. And I hope I did a good job. I don't know. I wouldn't trade it. I'm glad I was there. I mean, it's wild. It's wild to watch a person come out of a person. It's insane. But
it's super freaky. Yeah.
Yeah.
And like you said, like there can be pros and cons. Like it's wonderful for a lot of men. And it is like such a miracle. And I know I was so happy my husband was there because I was freaking out. Right. It's like this terrifying and like unpredictable experience. But it's also, it can be traumatic for men. So sometimes things go wrong or you're really scared and there's nothing you can do. And so some men do show difficulty adjusting to parenthood because the birth was so upsetting. So I think it's one of those things where we don't think about the fact that fathers haven't always been birth attendants. It's this new role for them. And like with a lot of aspects of fatherhood, we're still figuring this out as a species. Like this may not come naturally.
Interesting. Yeah, for our first kid, it was a very sketchy thing that happened. I won't go into details. I don't, maybe in another podcast people want to know the deal, but it was that kind of thing. Like for like a 30-second span, I was like, "Is my wife gonna die? What is happening?" But I wouldn't say. I think that ended once the delivery was successful. It was just like a wave of relief, and then just okay, let's get to work. But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. I wrote about this in the book, but when I was born, my dad actually had to scrub in to perform emergency surgery.
Wow.
So my dad's a surgeon, but obviously he didn't want to be, working at the birth. But my mom's uterus turned inside out. Like the doctor pulled a
Wow.
little too hard when delivering the placenta. And all of a sudden, my mom loses all this blood and like they have to put her back together. And my dad had to like go to work. And I always
Yeah.
think about it like I was probably just like this little newborn, like, hey, everyone forgot about me. And thankfully, my mom was fine. She recovered. She had two more kids. But think about that experience for a new dad. Like, you've just
That's
watched your baby be
crazy.
born, and then all of a sudden, you're in a gown, like,
Right.
literally holding the scalpel.
Yeah, and your wife just went through this crazy thing, and that's wild. You mentioned your husband, so for my viewers, Dan and I are friends. We know each other through music, and so I have a bit of a selfish aside here. I want to know about dad bod. Dan and I are two fellows that I would characterize as having mild dad bod. So I want to know, right, what is that? What there's a physiological impetus for this, I hear, right? Let's talk about dad bod.
Yeah, so we think of dad bod as like this comic insult, but it actually is a real phenomenon. So in mammals that are biparental, where males are involved in care, you actually do see weight increases across the transition to fatherhood. So in tamarin monkeys, those that are expecting and are having new babies actually do gain like 10% of their body weight. And it may be adaptive because you want to increase your body size to be more imposing and be a better guard of the new baby.
Interesting.
You also want to like store fat because you will need to provision your infant, right?
Right.
So it makes evolutionary sense that dads would get bigger when a baby is about to come. But in most human contexts, like 95% of our history, we were hunter-gatherers. So you were going from like extremely lean to perhaps slightly less lean. In our modern kind of obesogenic society, like men actually can start to be worried about their weight. And dad bod is probably driven by a bunch of different mechanisms, but they include hormonal changes like testosterone levels drop, lifestyle changes, sleep is disrupted, exercise and eating changes. It's this multi-determined phenomenon, but it is this real phenomenon that's been observed both in humans and in primates.
Yeah, I definitely feel like my metabolism has changed, and I can't tell if it's due to fatherhood or just getting older in general. Maybe a combination, but
Yeah, well,
it's
there
good
was
to
an
know.
epidemiological study that longitudinally looked over several decades, men who were recruited before they became fathers, and those who became dads actually did have an inflection point, like an uptick in weight gain, not shown by men who did not become children. So there is probably a role for fatherhood. The good news is that actually women prefer dad bods. So there have been several studies of single women shown a variety of body types, and they are more likely to endorse, like you said, the mild dad bod as being more attractive, maybe because it's signaling a man's willingness to invest in his new family, which is attractive to women.
Provided that we are actually dads and not just randomly gaining weight. What about dad's strength? Because I also feel, is that a thing? Because I feel like I'm stronger. I can just like lift more. And I don't know if it's because I'm like carrying my children everywhere all the time or so, but sometimes I'm at the gym and I'm like, I'm strong. I'm in not quite as good a shape as I was before. I'm older and achier, yet I can lift a bit more, and I'm not really sure why. Is that something?
I sorry to disappoint you. I don't think that's a thing.
Oh.
But well, although, it's true. Like you're basically lifting like a
Yeah.
10 to 35 pound weight
Constantly, yeah.
multiple
All
times
the
a
time.
day,
Yeah.
and maybe even bigger, right? So, and dads are more likely to engage in physical play of kids, like lifting, throwing, tossing kids. And all of that's actually really good exercise. It's weight-bearing exercise.
Okay, yeah. So probably not physiological, just just carrying them around all the time. Let's talk about so in terms of postpartum, obviously we know that there are women that have postpartum. Very fortunately, my wife didn't have that. She was really worried that she was going to for our second kid because the pregnancy was so awful. She had hyperemesis and was just vomiting all the time. She's like, this is going to screw me up. I'm going to have postpartum. So she didn't. But can dads have postpartum? Is that a thing?
So and I think the spotlight is on moms for good reason. So there has been a lot of awareness raising about postpartum depression, mood and anxiety disorders in new moms. We know there's heightened prevalence around the birth of a baby. But new dads are actually twice as likely to report mood disorders as men in the general population. So it is totally a risk for new fathers as well. And, as with depression in moms, it's probably driven by a combination of hormone changes, sleep changes, brain changes, lifestyle changes, and also like identity and social role changes. But it often gets missed in new dads because the symptoms can look a little bit different. So, postpartum depression in new moms can look like sadness, crying, what we call the vegetative symptoms, which is like staying in bed, loss of appetite, loss of interest in things. And in men, depression can often manifest as like irritability, like bursts of anger, withdrawing from the partner and baby, and sometimes even like hyper focus on work. So, and it makes sense that these symptoms show up differently, in part just that's because that we're of the social roles that we're playing. But it means that practitioners often just don't detect what could actually be a mood disorder in men. They just think he's like cranky and like not bonding.
It also it sounds a little bit similar to just being a bad father. It's just like I have postpartum. You don't have to but I
But
think
you wonder like how many cases of father absence or like father neglect are actually just driven by undiagnosed mood
what the overlap
disorders.
is there. I think, I mean, so I guess one question I really have is that, like, if we're identifying hormonal changes, for me, the physical impetus of the hormonal changes in a mother are very obvious because it's responding to something happening internally. But for a father, do we understand the mechanisms by which those hormonal changes can occur? Because to me, the input is not so obvious. What is it?
Yeah, it's a great question, and I feel like the field has not completely nailed this down. I have done a lot of work on hormonal co-regulation within cohabiting couples. So there is some evidence that when people live together, they start to match in their hormone levels. And I found this both in transition to parenthood context and non-transition to parenthood context. So we see correlations in levels of cortisol, prolactin, testosterone. So part of it is probably just like within partner kind of entrainment. Part of it might be like shared routines. Like we know that sleep and circadian rhythms determine a lot of hormone trajectories. A lot of them have diurnal rhythms. So when sleep is disrupted, our hormones look different. But with hormones like testosterone, you actually see shifts around reproductive windows, even in other species. Like a lot of the work on testosterone was done in birds. And like a lot of the early work, and there's evidence that like during reproductive like mating season, male birds show spikes in testosterone, and then once they successfully mate and have offspring, their testosterone drops. So it's a pattern that looks just like what we see in human men. And it's probably serving those different roles. Like when you have to compete for mates, you want to be aggressive, status seeking, competitive. And when you need to invest in nurturing, to make sure your offspring actually survive, you need to be patient, non-combative. So your repertoire is going to shift. And so we see these kind of like seasonal shifts in lots of different species.
That's so fascinating. Yeah. And it is across the animal kingdom. So there's very clear biological impetus for it.
Yeah.
Speaking of, so yeah, we're talking about the shift or the hormonal shift for a benefit of, you know, parenting. Let's talk about kind of the cultural stuff in terms of parenting styles, mothers and fathers. Are there, do we see any trends about, in terms of like unique ways that fathers parent that's different from mothers? What can we say about that?
Yeah, definitely. So we often think of dads as more like the physical playmate. And there is some evidence that not just human males, but males like primates that are involved in caregiving are just more involved in like risk-taking, like exploratory play. So you think about the prototypical, like tossing your toddler up in the air and catching them, chasing them around, tickling them. Right. So, and it turns out that kind of play is really good for kids because it actually tests their limits and it boosts their confidence. And so like kids need that kind of like more dad style play as they kind of develop and learn how to self-regulate. And there's a lot of evidence that dads who are more involved in early childhood, those kids have better peer relationships, like better outcomes across a lot of domains. It is somewhat cultural. So like hunter-gatherer research finds that dads actually aren't that much more engaged in physical risk-taking play than moms. So part of it is just like a social role thing.
Right.
But we do see this sort of like, you know, this unique style of father play has in some studies been linked with things like levels of oxytocin and, you know, father's sort of own enjoyment of the parenting role. So it seems like there's like so many things. It's like a mix of the biology and the culture.
It also kind of just in terms of the cultural shift towards having kids later. Like I think like 50 years ago, everyone was having kids in their 20s, whereas we, you know, I had my kids at 36 and 39, which I think is fairly average, but it does still mean that I'm in my 40s with little kids. And it's, you know, you're talking about the chasing and this stuff. It's like, I totally love doing that. But you know, there's like, okay, daddy's tired. I'm going to rest now. Whereas if I was 27, I might have more energy. Ugh, maybe I'm shortchanging them. But I couldn't have had them when I was in my 20s because I was broke. So they couldn't have all the things that we had.
I know. It's a trait. I think about this all the time because, yeah, like I had my kids in my 30s too. And it's like, oh, I probably could have dealt with the sleep deprivation a lot better 10 years ago. But then again, I was a giant flake. I would have like, you know, forgot to sign them up for preschool. So who knows?
I don't know. I think it worked out fine. But some people have kids in their 40s and then they're in their 50s with young kids. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I think I kind of split the difference pretty well.
Yeah.
But talking about, you know, mothers and fathers together, how does that relationship change? You know, you have that bond. I mean, not everybody. Some people kind of like have a whoopsie kid and then decide to tie the knot. But, you know, if you're a couple that has been planning to have children and then you go ahead and you do that, what does that look like in that transition?
Yeah, so we know the transition to parenthood is a high-risk time for couple relationship satisfaction. So ever since the 50s, researchers have called it like a crisis event for the marriage. So we see this kind of nosedive in relationship quality, usually around the birth of a child, which is kind of a bummer. But I think the upside is if couples can figure it out and stick it out, relationship quality might rebound, you know, as kids get older. So like some relationships dissolve, other couples are able to, you know, recover and improve relationship quality. You see these different trajectories. But, you know, it makes sense. It's a risky time for the relationship, not only because of sleep changes, lifestyle changes, but also like identity changes and just the responsibilities. And division of childcare, household labor is often like a huge sore point between couples. Frequently, you know, men will compare themselves to what their fathers and grandfathers were doing and think like, I'm so involved, I'm so helpful. Women will compare their partners to themselves and think I'm still doing most of it.
Right.
So that can be a huge kind of lightning rod for conflict between couples. You know, because we are in this changing world in which women are earning more income But our social roles in the household haven't totally evolved to kind of like fit that yet.
Yeah, totally. I mean, there's a lot more kind of hybrid like earning and slash responsibility dynamics. I found myself in a very traditional situation, not because we're traditional people by any means. I abhor gender roles, but it just kind of ended up being like, all right, I figured out how to earn money, so I'll earn all the money, but then, help as much as I can. But it is, yeah, I do feel bad for couples that kind of like can't make it through that. I will say that like having a 3-year-old toddler with level 2 autism and then a newborn when my second one was born was by
Yeah.
far the most stressful time of my life. And like we definitely weren't at it with each other. We were just kind of stressed together and just like, ugh. But then you kind of, I mean, it's so much easier now. It's still having kids is stressful, but yeah, you do kind of get out of it, and then you're like, hey, we can like go to the zoo or something, and everyone's having a great time, and we're like having a great family time, so those rewards are there for you. Did what
Yeah.
was your experience with Dan? I mean, did you have ups and downs or?
Definitely. And like I'm still married to him, so that's good, and I
Yeah.
still like him. But I like we were just so tired. Like
Yeah.
I feel like it was so easy to fight about stuff. Like the first, I don't know, 3 to 5 years, like there are parts I don't even remember that well because I think I was just so sleep deprived.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you're like fighting with this person you love about like who washed out the kid's cereal bowl and like who lost track of the stuffed animal, and it's like, why are we doing this? But I think you're just like so exhausted and there's like so much going on because your kids need you all the time
Yeah.
that unless you can, I think, really like just prioritize the relationship and you need to have like really good conflict resolution skills, the relationship quality just inevitably is going to suffer a bit.
Totally. This is where smart, well communicating adults have the upper hand. I mean, you and Dan strike me as smart, people who can have a conversation. Me and my wife, or my wife is a psychologist. I'm a professional communicator. We just kind of have that upper hand of like anything that could blow up. It's like, oh, you meant that? Okay, I misinterpreted that. You can kind of like dig into that. And so here we are.
I mean, there have been some studies of couples communication interventions to see whether can you prevent discord around the transition to parenthood.
Right.
So like do couples therapy before the birth of a baby. And some of those have promising results. So there is some potential for kind of like large scale intervention around just like buffering the couple relationship for this
Yeah.
inevitable
Absolutely.
shock.
Outline expectations, kind of designate the roles, and if I'm too tired to do this, please do this, and well, yeah, totally, yeah.
We force couples in our lab to have an infant care division of labor discussion in the lab. So they do it during pregnancy and then they come back at 6 months postpartum with their baby and they do the same discussion. And so we're able to actually look at like what did they think they were going to be doing, and then what does it actually look like after the baby's birth? And in almost every case, the couple is estimating that it's going to be a very egalitarian split, and then after birth, mom is usually doing more.
Yes.
And a lot of that just makes sense. If she's breastfeeding, there's just more for her to do.
Yeah, I mean, the way I always looked at it is it's like I'm not, I mean, it's stereotypical, but I am not that cut out for a lot of the stuff that she does. But the way that I feel that I can bring balance is that if I work really hard and I earn extra money, hey, I can pay someone to come every 2 weeks and clean the house. I can pay for somebody to help you with the kids here and there. We don't have like a live-in nanny, but sometimes somebody comes to the house. So it's like if I work harder at the thing that I do, I can help you with money. So that ends up working out.
And I think that ends up working out really well for some couples. And I think then for other couples, like, they need to negotiate like a different arrangement.
Yes.
Like, equal earner couples are the fastest growing share of the US population.
Right. Yeah.
So this source of conflict is gonna persist in
Yes.
couples. And I think we need like better skills and better
Yes.
understanding of just how to balance everything.
Yes. When you have the equal earners, there's so much minutia, and every single task is kind of delegated in its own way. And unfortunately, the way the economy is, just like almost, I feel very lucky that I could, that we I can be, we can be single income. But yeah.
Yeah, one thing my lab has looked at is cognitive household labor. So like who's planning and anticipating needs, because like that part of like thinking about housework is so different from actually just executing. And that does tend to be a piece that's held more traditionally by mom. And it can be a huge source of resentment in couples. So finding ways to make the mental load more external and communicate better about it can be another thing that can help prevent a lot of the conflict that happens.
That resentment, you can't let that fester, whether it's, income based or task based. It just, you can't be like, I always do this and you never do this. That's a killer. Let's talk about so fatherhood. You have little kids, they grow up. Now you're an older gentleman, you're an old man here with adult kids. What does that look like psychologically? Are there benefits that sh that appear in old age for fathers?
So there's actually this really cool emerging body of research finding that parenting may even be neuroprotective to the aging brain. So there are, I think, four or five studies now that have come out using data from the UK Biobank, which is this like huge, like tens of thousands of neuroimaging scans from people in their 50s and 60s. And they have linked parity, which is to say, like how many children somebody has, to markers of brain age. And what's interesting is that for both mothers and fathers, having had more children is linked with what seems to be a younger looking, like more flexible, better functioning brain. And there's kind of a sweet spot where like with two or three kids, you get the biggest benefit and then it sort of levels off. So like you don't, it's not like a linear relationship where you need to just like keep having kids.
Having 10 kids will drive you insane and you'll die of, at 50.
Like it'll level off. It's not that helpful after a certain point, but the fact that we see it for men as well as women tells us it's not just pregnancy hormones that appear to be neuroprotective. It's got to be something else about either parenting experience, like we talked about, like experience-dependent neuroplasticity, or social integration. Like we know that loneliness and isolation are huge risk factors for mortality in late life, especially in men. So like men are more likely to end up living alone in late life, and men who don't have many social connections have earlier mortality. And in part that's just because like women are often like have larger social networks. Men can be more dependent on the partner. And so it may be that having had more kids just sets men up to be more connected. And that in itself, it provides like a brain boost. But there's also work on cognitive function that finds that the like working memory and like response time look better if you've had more kids. So it may also be like mental practice that you're getting.
It makes sense to me that performing fatherly tasks impacts how your brain changes over time. No, that completely makes sense. I mean, there's things that I do as a dad that non-dads don't do. I mean, 100%. And even just even as simple as like kind of inhabiting the play space more often, I would imagine probably has some beneficial effects.
Yeah, and I think another big thing is like we all need to have a sense of meaning and purpose. And I think like a lot of men will say that being a parent is one of their greatest sources of meaning. And it's like a sense of legacy, right? Like, why am I doing this? What am I passing on to the next generation? And I think that is very protective of mental and physical health, is to feel that sense of like social integration and that you have like a meaningful role to play in this life. So fatherhood is good for that.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think I agree with that. So how is society changing and reacting to a newer conception of fatherhood? Like, almost nobody would not offer maternity leave. That's like impossible. But paternity leave is something that we're kind of starting to talk about. I don't think that many companies offer it. How does that look in America? How does it look in other countries? I feel like probably what I bet Scandinavia like already has it and stuff. What's where are we at with paternity leave?
So we're way behind other countries in both maternity and paternity leave. So we are the only industrialized wealthy country that does not offer paid maternity leave or like universal paid parental leave.
Right, not universal at least, yeah.
We are an outlier.
Yeah.
We have unpaid maternity leave, but a lot of people aren't eligible for it. So like if you're a gig worker, if you're a shift worker,
Right.
tons of people fall through the cracks. Like
Yep.
there is some data that a quarter of new moms go back to work 2 weeks after the birth of a baby, which is like
That's
insane,
nuts.
insane. So as you can imagine, like we're also not in a great place with paternity leave. And yeah, in like the Nordic countries, they have actually developed these like nudge or incentive programs where you get like a use it or lose it leave, where the couple gets leave, but some of it is actually earmarked for the dad. And if the dad doesn't take it, it just goes away. So it kind of incentivizes men to take leave. And like Norway was one of the first countries to adopt this. And when they did, way more dads started taking time off, right? Because all of a sudden it was like you had this benefit that was like conditional on you taking time off. And it's really created like a culture of fatherhood in those countries where it, like in Sweden, you have this thing called latte papas, which are like men who walk around with their latte cups and like go to the park and like have play dates and like they're just home with like young kids, for 3 months or 6 months or whatever the leave period is. And so it creates this sort of like normalization of fatherhood that I think is like new in certain parts of the world. Like the definition of fatherhood is changing quickly, and we're kind of undergoing this like rearrangement of parental roles as women develop more, income and status in the workplace. And yet we also see how it varies just depending on different public policies.
Absolutely, yeah. I feel like it's inevitable when you're shedding the more archaic gender roles, things have to change on both sides. What about ongoing through fatherhood? Is the workplace suggesting at all, not just for paternity leave, but in general, men who want to be more involved, in parenthood? Are we seeing changes there?
Yeah, so I have a chapter on dads at work. I interviewed a bunch of different dads kind of about their experiences with work. And a lot of people said to me they just feel like the norms have changed generationally. And in part, the pandemic was a big inflection point because men all of a sudden were home with kids and just much more involved in day-to-day life. And for a lot of millennial men, they just didn't necessarily want to go back to long hours at the office. And so the sort of like idea of like working remotely, working more flexibly, kids popping up on Zoom meetings, like all of those things have kind of shifted our norms around parenting. And I think the most progressive workplaces are adapting to that and finding ways to develop policies that adapt better to dads. At the same time, you also have this like rising gig economy of like Amazon warehouse workers and Uber drivers and folks who maybe don't have a lot of benefits and job security, where it's actually harder to show up as an involved parent. So I feel like the economic story of the day is that everything is K-shaped. And I think like fatherhood is also kind of K-shaped. It's like for the most advantaged fathers, they're spending more time than ever before. And for the least privileged dads, their time with kids is actually going down.
Yeah, they're just at the mercy of whatever. Yeah, I mean, that opens it up to a much broader economic discussion of where the job market is going, and and as AI more and more layoffs, and we just open up a whole nother can of worms there. But
Although, I mean, that you could argue AI is like one of the few things AI can't do very well is parent your kids for you.
right, of course, yeah. So then it just becomes a matter of like, will we ever get UBI to like, I don't know. Yeah, whole other discussion.
I wrote a whole op-ed about UBI for caregivers. I think zero, if you have kids from 0 to 3, you should get UBI.
Yeah, I would get on board with that in a second. Yeah, I mean, it's just so hard. Having little kids is so hard. It's so much harder than I thought it was going to be. It really was. And now that my younger is 3 and he can talk, I mean, he's still kind of in a whiny phase. I think in like 1 to 2 years from now, it's just going to be so good because it was so hard. And then when it's all of a sudden not so hard, and you have these two awesome little humans that you're friends with, it's just like, oh, it was all worth it.
I feel the same way. My kids are 14 and 16, so now I have to fight to get them to spend time with me. And it's like my life is so much less stressful than it was 10 years ago.
I can only
It's
imagine.
crazy. It's crazy. Last night I went outside my house and like went to a rock show and
Yeah.
like came back whenever I felt like it, and
Yeah.
nobody was worried, and it was like a total freedom.
Yeah, they can do everything themselves. Yeah, it's like my older one can like go to the bathroom on his own and stuff, and I'm like, wow, all right, one last thing, you know? But
Yeah, once you can go places with no car seat, no stroller, no bibs, no
yeah, no
pacifiers,
diapers,
no
none of
diaper
that. Yeah.
bag, you're like, oh my God, I'm so free.
Yeah. And then it only gets easier from there until you're like, oh, I wish some of it would come back.
Yeah, now I'm like knocking on my kid's door, being like, hey, do you want to
Hang
hang
out.
out?
Yeah, please.
Yeah, come sit with me on the couch. We can watch a show.
Yeah. Well, I'll try to. Yeah, I have this kind of like middle sector to look forward to, but we'll see. But anyway, yeah, it sounds like, I mean, yeah, motherhood, fatherhood, it's all great. And it looks like the era of the dad is kind of coming up here. So yeah, I can't think of anything else to ask, but tell us where we can find your book.
Yes, so it is coming out June 9th, and it will be at bookstores everywhere. Folks can pre-order it before then, and I'll show you the cover again. Here it is. It's coming out from Flatiron Press, which is a division of Macmillan, and available wherever books are sold.
Very cool. I will definitely have the link in the description. Everybody, go ahead and check it out. But yeah, thanks so much for talking to me.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Fascinating stuff, no? I know I learned a lot. If you're interested in checking out the book for yourself, whether you're a dad, planning to become a dad, or as a gift for a special dad in your life, check the link in the description. Otherwise, stay tuned for more fascinating discussions with researchers and other academics in the near future.